is our fourth case of the day.
Good morning. This appeal involves two sentencing issues. Whether the four-level enhancement under Section 2K2.1B6 for use or possession of a firearm in connection with another felony offense is applicable. And secondly, whether the imposition of the statutory maximum sentence was unreasonable. Mr. Wise is a convicted...
Given the second issue, does the first really matter? As the district judge has pretty much told us that he was going to impose the statutory maximum based on the defendant's total conduct. So why does the guideline calculation really matter?
Well, I think it does because it, if the enhancement didn't apply, his range would have been 57 to 71
months.
Range
would have been lower, but yes. My question is premised on the district court's statement, your total conduct and life draws the statutory maximum. And the judge has pretty much announced that he just didn't care about the guideline calculation. It wasn't influencing him.
Well, I think it might have, though, if it had been a lot lower, because he was only going departing or varying upward by 12 months, whereas if the guideline range had been a lot lower,
he might
have reconsidered such a whether the statutory maximum.
The problem from that perspective is the judge is still entitled, whether or not 2K2.1B6 applies. The judge is entitled to take into account the fact that Wise left a gun knowing a child could easily get it and that a child did get it and death resulted from that. All of those are things the judge should lawfully can take into account.
Yeah, I agree. He can. But I don't.
He also could take into account, as he said, that this was the most egregious felon in possession case he'd ever seen.
Yes, but
that
I think he
it's a terrible fact situation.
I agree. It's a terrible case.
Right. The judge, in the end, says some few cases deserve the statutory maximum, and this is it. And when the judge is effectively saying, I would love to give a sentence higher than 120, but I'm sorry, I can't, it doesn't look like there's much point in arguing about where the guideline range lies under 120.
Well, though he also did consider whether or not to give less time based on his acceptance of responsibility and his forthcomingness in leading the police to where the gun was hit or tossed. So I think that it's not... While I agree that Judge Reagan did, in fact, indicate that it was a very egregious case and he thought the statutory maximum was the appropriate sentence, I think if the guideline range is lower, that he might reconsider whether he's going to impose a statutory maximum, maybe give him some credit for accepting responsibility, which he did consider doing during the sentencing hearing.
Was he the father of the 2-year-old?
No, he was not
he
the biological.
He was at one time.
He raised her.
But he was not the father.
He was not biological, no. He considered himself to be her father, but he was not. So, that's something, too, that I think, I mean, he was very remorseful, of course, for what happened. And it's suffering the consequences of the loss, as well as now a 10-year jail sentence. I think that it sounds to me, I don't even know if you want me to go into the in connection with the felony offense.
This is your time.
Well, okay, I'll just briefly touch on it.
Allocate it as you deem appropriate.
The issue here was whether the leaving the firearm endangering the welfare of a child under Illinois law is another felony offense under 2K2.1B6. The district court found that the defendant personally committed that offense of willfully endangering the welfare of a child. However, application note 4 to that section states that subsection B6 applies if the firearm facilitated or had the potential of facilitating another felony offense. The courts in interpreting in connection with have looked at case law construing in relation to. The Supreme Court defined in relation to in the context of using a firearm in connection with a drug trafficking crime to, at a minimum, have some purpose or effect with respect to the drug trafficking crime. Its presence or involvement can't be the result of just a mistake or a coincidence or an accident. The gun must have the potential of facilitating the drug trafficking crime. And the Sentencing Commission adopted a similar definition for in connection to or in connection with, requiring that the firearm facilitate the other felony offense. In this case, Mr. Wise was not trying to facilitate the endangerment offense at all. He made an irresponsible decision to leave the firearm on a ledge behind an amplifier in the living room. But
loaded and with the safety off.
Yes. And but however, placing it there, he was felon in possession right then when he was in possession of the firearm. That's the same offense as the willful endangerment of the child. That offense was him placing the firearm on the ledge.
He's felon in possession if he's living alone in the apartment, but if he's got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old running around.
Yeah, it's easy to be a felon in possession without leaving your gun where a child can get it. That's the sense in which these are separate offenses.
But the offense of endangering the welfare of the child involves leaving the firearm laying there.
Yes, and you can commit that offense without being a felon in possession.
That's true.
Right, so there are distinct offenses.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schooley. Mr. Crow.
Good morning, Your Honors. James Crow on behalf of the United States. May it please the Court. Your Honor, Judge Evans, in order to address the first point you raised with my opposing counsel, I think it is particularly relevant in this instance to look at the sentence from the ultimate sentence imposed when considering whether or not the guideline challenge raised by the appellant matters as it is on appeal. In particular here, because the arguments that the appellant advances with respect to 2K2.1b6 pursuant to this court's holding in Lange in August of this year were forfeited in as much as they were not raised below. So that, as we've set out in our brief, relegates this to a review of plain error, and so that begs the question of would the ultimate sentence imposed, the ultimate outcome, have been different but for any would-be error on the part of the district court in applying 2K2.1b6, and I think as the court has recognized, the answer to that is categorically and without a doubt, no. It's not reasonably probable, and in fact it's well-nigh impossible, based on the court's findings below, that he would have done anything but impose the statutory maximum sentence in this case. I don't think it's fair to characterize the district court as having barreled through a guideline analysis and to attain an ultimate maximum or visceral sentence in this case. Much to the contrary, there was a half-day evidentiary hearing on the objections relative to the potentially applicable guideline enhancements, which included two adjustments to base offense level for which the court declined to impose the applicable adjustment and the criminal history points for being on escape status. So he rendered his analysis very thoroughly and to a painstaking degree, as is set out in the record of the second sentencing hearing. The further basis that the district court provided for the 10-year sentence, I believe, Your Honors, without regard to the guideline range, provides an ample basis for the ultimate above-guideline sentence that was imposed. And I'd submit that with respect to the district court's sensitivity to Gaul in relating its reasons for imposing the above-guideline sentence, that the rationale offered by the district court for the 10-year sentence would support even a variance from a 57 to 71 month range. And so it's in that vein that the government argued, and not to say that any procedural infirmities in the guideline analysis should just be ignored, but rather that in this case, it's clear where the district court thought where the sentence ought to wind up in this case. It rendered its analysis on 2K2.1B6 and nevertheless found the 10 years appropriate. And I think it's all the more relevant under the plain error review standard that we submit applies in this case. I think in that vein, just briefly as to the forfeiture, the defendant even concedes in its his reply brief that he is in fact raising new arguments on appeal, although if in the same vein of some of the arguments offered below. And I think that's all this court need recognize in terms of the Lange argument offered vis-a-vis the construction of 2K2.1B6, whether the former phrase of use or possession as it applies to an actual individual convicted of the felon in possession offense versus transfer to another individual who might then commit a separate felony. Here it matters not, Your Honors, for the following reason. The court found it both ways. The district court found both that the defendant possessed this firearm in connection with another felony offense and that he left it out and essentially transferred it thereby constructively, leaving open the possibility it would be possessed by someone else for in a separate felony offense. So post-Lange, the court can essentially disregard the district court's latter finding and go with the former, which is amply supported by the record, that this defendant possessed a firearm, and under the guidance of Application Note 14A, it not only did it have the potential to facilitate a separate felony offense, it in fact did, without
what
question.
Would be the, just curious, what would be the penalty under Illinois state law for this offense?
I don't recall, Your Honor. I do believe we set it out in the brief. It is an incrementally increasing penalty based on the gravity. I think the maximum.
Well, it causes death, as it did here.
Causes death is a necessary prong in this case, Your Honor, because unless it results in death, it is not a felony offense to
correct.
Recklessly endanger
it's
a child.
Felony offense in Illinois.
Correct.
If it causes death.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what is the penalty?
I believe it's 8 years, but I can't recall offhand, Your Honor. He was charged, I would note, with that offense in Madison County Circuit Court in the state of Illinois before this case was indicted federally and the state charges were dismissed in favor of the federal prosecution. And this is one of the arguments that we raised below, that essentially this is a case where the law is imperfect in as much as it fails to and does not have a proper vehicle for taking into account.
The actual sentence maximum under state law is 10 years. Shall be sentenced to a term of not less than 2 years and not more than 10 years.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
It says.
So in any event, in terms of the defendant's argument that the possession of the firearm by the defendant did not make more dangerous this felony offense, we respectfully disagree because, in fact, the possession of the firearm by the defendant by leaving it out at once makes it both a felony and a dangerous one, because in order for it to be a felony, it must result in death, as it did here. The district court made specific findings in terms of not only the elemental difference between the underlying offense of reckless endangerment of a child resulting in death, but also the separation in time, and so neither of those challenges, as advanced by the appellant, hold any water. As to the willfulness challenge, just briefly, the appellant asserts that essentially there is no mens rea requirement for the ultimate result that attained in this case under Illinois law, that is, death of the child. However, under Illinois, the statute setting out the offense of reckless endangerment, 720 ILCS 5-12-21.6A, it says that it must be a proximate cause of the death of the child in order for it to be a Class 3 felony. Well, when you look to the definition of willfully under state law, it does contemplate results. So essentially, the mens rea requirement that is fulfilled in the outset of the operative statute here, willfully causing or permitting the life or health of a child to be endangered, is fulfilled because the result of that conduct is included in willful when the defendant is consciously aware that such result is practically certain to be caused by his conduct. The court need look no further than the fact that this defendant was adamant in his post-arrest statement that there were no children in the house when he left the gun there. Why else would he assert that unless he knew that had there been children in the house, the proximate and inevitable result, the practically certain result under Illinois law, was that a child would find it in the very room where he left it uncased, accessible, and within reach of the children, who ultimately found it within moments of entering the apartment that evening. Your Honors, at the end of the day, the sentence imposed by the district court was not a visceral one, but rather a reasoned one that comports not only with all of the tenets of 3553A, in considering the nature and circumstances of the offense. The judge weighed all of the factors relevant to, or the facts in this case relevant to that. He considered even giving this defendant time off for accepting responsibility, and there's actually a well-developed record on that when he questioned me below on that point, but simply found at the end of the day that that would not serve the purposes of 3553A of deterring others from committing similar offenses and for promoting respect for the law by persons like Mr. Wise, who are convicted felons and should not possess firearms in the first instance, regardless of where they place them. And again, the reasons given by the district court would ultimately support a variance even had the lower range applied, but that's certainly not a fact that, that the government concedes. If there are no questions from the panel, I yield the balance of my time to the court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Cooley?
I want to address the waiver issue.
Please wait till you get to the podium to start talking.
On the waiver issue, I just want to make it clear that in the district court, our objections were specifically to 2K2.1B6. And this court has held in the past that you aren't limited to your arguments in the district court on appeal, as long as you preserved that issue. And we did preserve the issue as to whether a four-level enhancement applied. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.